That's one of the reasons why, like I was mentioning earlier, when I started working, communications was not something I was good at. I mentioned part of it was personality, but part of it was just like, I wasn't taught these things. Now that I work with a lot of higher educational, you know, institutions, they tell me the same things where they want to better prepare their students to do it. But yes, they realize that that's the gap.
Our guest today, Jessica Chen, is an Emmy Award winner, a LinkedIn superstar, and her courses have reached over 2 million people worldwide. Join us today on Unique Genius, the business of creators, where we dive in and learn more from some of the most successful creators out there.
Okay, so I have been running Soulcast Media for the last 4 to 5 years. Prior to that, I used to be on TV. So I used to be a television news reporter at ABC, NBC in New York for a few years. And then when I decided to start my company, I had this vision of, okay, I wanted to revolve around communications because communications was always something that I was never really good at. And the funny thing is, I always joke that starting my career on TV in news, it was like a masterclass in learning from some of the best communicators. For somebody who I'm fairly shy, fairly introverted, timid, if you can imagine suddenly going into this like very like extroverted, front-facing role, you really have to learn quickly. So basically, I learned so many things about communications in 10 years because I was a reporter for about 10 years that I was like, I need to take all this knowledge, like all these tips and share it with those in the professional world. So that's why I started Soulcast Media and we've been around for about 4 or 5 years. I've now taught over 2 million people how to become better communicators. There's been so much that we've been doing corporate trainings. I do a lot of speaking. I have a book coming out. So none of these were, you know, these were dreams. But as an entrepreneur, there's no guarantee, right? Yeah. So you're just kind of like, I hope I can get there one day. This is the hope and the impact I can make. But, you know, we can talk about this in more detail. But yes, very, very grateful for where we are now and truly the impact we've made.
Amazing. And now you mentioned the corporate trainings. It seems like you have a fair number of, is it all corporate trainings? Do you have other sort of corporate relationships, partnerships? I saw some stuff around Prezi and Google and other places that you've worked with.
Yes. So we have a lot of different ways that we work with different corporate companies if we're kind of going that route. So the most, I guess, relevant one is I do a lot of like communication types of workshops. So corporate companies, especially those in the L&D space, they'll figure out and find my work. A lot of it's through LinkedIn because that's where my platform is. That's the one I've like doubled down on. It's LinkedIn. They'll see my work because I'm also a LinkedIn learning instructor. Right. And then they'll be like, hey, we heard about you. We heard about Soulcast Media. Can you come in and train our engineering team or sales team on how to become more effective communicators? Because the thing with the communications is it's universal. It doesn't even matter what industry, what specialty, what your expertise is. Everybody can be a better communicator. Yeah. So that's kind of number one. The second one is getting invited to just do speaking engagements.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the kind of like the one-off events. A lot of it's more motivational. It's always around communications, but when you're keynote speaking versus teaching, it's a little different, right? We've also recently entered the higher education space, which has been very, very cool. And I have to give credit to a college in Texas because he, so I'm trying to figure out if I should say his name, but anyways, he basically joined one of our programs in-house at Soulcast Media. And we have a membership program, which we can talk about later. He was one of our members and he was like, oh my God, this stuff, like all the communication stuff I'm learning from you, we need to teach it to our students because if you, you know, it's no surprise, a lot of these students, they go into school, they learn really good stuff, but a lot of it is not those like, you know, tactical career-based skills,
right?
And so a lot of the things we teach are things like, how do you speak to your manager? How do you engage in difficult conversations? How do you ask for a raise? How do you create an elevator pitch? Like these are just like really basic, really important career communication skills that you don't learn in school. So basically kudos to him for essentially introducing us to the higher education space. So now we're doing work there. And then we're also like on a whole list of things that we do. Another part of it is we partner with a lot of organizations. So like, for example, women organizations, and we implement communications programs as like professional development.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's like quite a broad range of business models. So you're building an audience on LinkedIn. Is that primary audience source for you is like engaging on LinkedIn? I know your top four, top voice, and you've got your LinkedIn course on LinkedIn Learning. So that's like primary audience channel for you. Then it comes in, they're buying a LinkedIn, potentially LinkedIn Learning course, but that really is still audience building, it sounds like, where they're getting exposed to you. I mean, there's a revenue source there, but then from there, you've got membership, corporate training, higher education, other products within that, or, well, speaking at the corporate level.
So the way I see it is LinkedIn, it's a social media platform, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the way I view it is it's how people get to know me first. Mm-hmm. And they develop a relationship with you, because for me, I'm always posting content and I make it as educational as possible of like, these are the things you need to do. And it's always, it's a range in terms of what kind of communications topics I'm talking about. But from there, they get to know me. And then of course, there's that interest like, okay, Jessica's been talking, I've been following this girl named Jessica. She's talked about communication skills. What else? And then from mm-hmm. there, then they start kind of following you, and then they start looking at your stuff, and it kind of just trickles from there.
And I love that you're doing this at the university level too. It's interesting. It's such a gap, I think, in our current education. You look back, I think ancient Rome, there were three subjects they taught, and one of them was communications and public speaking. I think another one was debate. So it seems like such a core skill that we really don't cover enough in school.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why, like I was mentioning earlier, when I started working, communications was not something I was good at. Mm-hmm. I mentioned part of it was personality, but part of it was just like, I wasn't taught these things. Right. And I had a great education and mm-hmm. I studied international relations, which also, mm-hmm. you know, it's not necessarily communications, but yeah, you learn a lot of like mm-hmm. theories and things like that in school, but how to make it applicable, mm-hmm. that's always a gap. And I mm-hmm. now that I work with a lot of higher educational, you know, institutions, mm-hmm. they tell me the same things where they want to better prepare their students mm-hmm. to do it. But yes, they realize that that's the gap.
So you've got all these different revenue sources and business models, products that you're offering. Curious, what was the first one that you offered, and even what was that experience like going from really stable, successful career, right? Very successful, to making this leap into being an entrepreneur, probably a little scary. What's that initial period like where you get to that, okay, something's actually working here versus, you know, making that jump?
There's no guarantee, right? And it's true. A lot of people are like, you had such a successful career news, which I did. And I actually say, so I won an Emmy Award, and a lot of folks were like, wow, you just won the most prestigious award in television, which is an Emmy Award. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you can do anything. You can go anywhere. And at the time, it's funny, when I first started on TV, my dream was to be an international correspondent mm-hmm. to work for CNN, or, you know, just that was a dream that I wanted. But I think, you know, with a lot of people, they enter, they start a job and they do it. And they work. And then there comes a point where you're like, is this really what I want for myself? And I still keep in contact with a lot of folks on TV, you know, my media friends. But for me, I was like, there's something about it that I was always like, but I feel like there's more, right, yeah. that I can do. And I have to give credit to my father, because he's an entrepreneur himself. Actually, my brother's also, we're all entrepreneurs.
Wow.
And so I think that idea of trying to do something yourself, mm-hmm. having that autonomy, having that independence, and knowing it's not going to be easy, but I feel like that was always something that was kind of always in me.
Yeah,
it was probably one of the reasons why I actually wanted to get into television, especially news, because when you're a news reporter, a lot of the work that you're doing is also by yourself. You know, you're going out by yourself, you're interviewing people by yourself, you're putting together researching. A lot of it is alone, especially in kind of like the early days. So I liked that freedom. But I've always been, you know, was thinking, if I really want to do something myself, like, this is the time. For me, I've always wanted to target the business audience. And to me, that felt like where LinkedIn was. Yeah. And I think, ironically, at the time, LinkedIn was thinking the same thing,
right,
where they were like, hey, we're noticing these creators. And at the time, it was just a place to put in your new title, your new job,
yeah,
it was just like your resume, that was it. But then I think simultaneously, it was also the right timing. As I was putting content, they were also starting to double down on their creators.
And did you start that while you were working? Or did the building your audience on LinkedIn come after you made the jump?
It was after I made the jump.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to admit, there was a period of time with a lot of like self-reflection of like, okay, what is it that I really want to do? Had all these crazy ideas. But I think for me, it always came down to communications and who did I want my audience to be? It was like the business space.
Yeah. So that's where you made the leap out of work and then started to develop this vision of helping business people with communications, build that up and then go after that.
Yes. There's tons of people out there, though, who's talking about communications, right? I'm not unique in that way where I'm like, I want to talk about communication skills or I want to talk about public speaking skills. And I recognize that. So I think for a lot of creators, you also have to figure out, what's your differentiating factor? Mm-hmm. What's going to make you stand out a little bit differently from all the other people who are talking about relatively the same thing? So for me, I doubled down on telling folks the story of, and it's a true story of, like we talked about earlier, growing up, I was not raised with, certain principles that told me I need to be more outspoken. I need to be better. I need to invest in communication skills. Like growing up in a fairly conservative home, it was mostly about you just work hard, put your head down. You just do that. That's how you show up in the workplace. And then you'll get promoted. But then you quickly realize when you go out into the working world, like it isn't just putting your head down and working. Communication is really important. So now I talk about how there's two sides to us, right? There's the working us, right? We got our deadlines, we got to make sure we do our work. But then there's also the communicating us, right? You need both. And I always find that the communicating us, sometimes because of the way we were raised, we never invested in that skill. So that's kind of how I frame my message, which is maybe a little bit different from how other communications folks do.
Right. I like that because you've got not just a topic and an expertise, but you're thinking, how do I actually differentiate in this in a competitive space where there are a lot of people in this, which is great. But also a lot of people in it because there's a lot of opportunity. A lot of people need this skill. What's it look like when you would either make the first sale of whether it was a course or a consulting or a speaking or...
With a lot of young creators where you're trying to essentially help slash educate them and teaching them something, I think a lot of folks start out kind of the way I did, a lot of one-on-one coaching.
Yeah.
And I think it is fantastic because when you start out, you don't necessarily know like, okay, what is going to work? And it also one-on-one coaching allows you to like get to understand other people's issues so that you can refine how you want to teach too. Because when you're talking to people in this level, you know, they're sharing a certain kind of like pain point that you kind of might have, you recognize and it resonates with you, but hearing it from somebody else can validate that for you, right? So then once you kind of work one-on-one, and that's kind of how I started a lot of one-on-one clients who are like, Jessica, help me with communications. That's when I started to kind of have a more solid theme and framework of like, okay, because one-on-one is very hard to scale, right? There's only like one of me. I cannot be always doing one-on-one coaching. So then the next logical thing is, of course, courses, right? And then kind of expanding from there. And then once you create a course, and there's so much you can do with that, right? So I started creating a few courses, eventually white labeling courses, eventually then corporate companies wanting to like have more custom courses. But I think starting out with one-on-one is great. That's how I started out. And then it kind of just like trickled from there.
So starting with, I love that because you get that constant instantaneous feedback to adjust your message. Whereas once you digitize it and put it out, it is a bit more of a slower learning curve to make adjustments to it. Plus it's a bit more work.
Yeah. How many times can you go in and like redo your content, right? So it's kind of
many. I've done it. I'm sure you have too.
So yeah, one-on-one is great because it's almost like research for yourself too, to understand like the people that you want to work with, what are their pain points?
Yeah.
And these are folks that you're developing a relationship with as well when you're like, okay, yeah, I see there's a common theme here.
Yeah. So, yeah. Amazing. And meanwhile, you're building an audience. So you've always got that to sort of fall back into once you get to the courses. You have a team, right?
I have a team. We're not a big team. I have about 10 folks at our company. But for the most part, I do most of the stuff still.
Okay.
And I love it. And but yeah, it is mostly me and a small team, about like 10 of us with different roles. And I actually recently, talking about the one-on-one coaching, because I don't do it so much anymore, we hired a team of other like coaches who basically help with that.
So how did you think about adding to or even first hires in your team? Because initially you're scaling it, you're doing everything yourself. Sounds like still lots. But when did you start thinking, okay, I got to add someone?
When I realized that there was way more to do and I only had X amount of time. I think, and I'll tell you, so my approach with hiring, and I think with every entrepreneur, you have to make a decision of like, what kind of company are you trying to build, right? Because I worked with a lot of entrepreneurs who are, yes, we're trying to raise X million amount of money and do all these like very exciting things. And for me, I was like, is that what I want to do? Do I want to build like this huge company with tons of employees and all that kind of stuff? And I realized that that's actually not what I wanted. I actually wanted to kind of keep it small and intimate and try to reach people in other ways versus creating this like huge, huge company. So for me, and the way I hire people is, yes, skills are important, but I look more about like the person that I'm hiring. So I want to get to know every single person I'm working with and to know that everybody, each of the employees I have also an entrepreneurial spirit too.
Okay.
To me, I have found that is so important because I have found entrepreneurs are very go-getters.
Yeah.
They're very proactive. And you cannot teach somebody that. You have to innately embody that. So for me, that's always been my number one hiring trait. I'm trying to remember, did I put that in my job description? I don't remember. But to me, that's what I look for. And I think every person who I've hired who has embodied that, they've stayed the entire time. The folks who I've hired who I'm like, oh man, like they're really good at this skill and I really need somebody with this skill, but they didn't have that, I guess, drive and fire, that those have been a bit more challenging.
So you've got a real value there that is like, if this isn't a fit, then it's not a fit.
Especially when you're a small company, like you have to find folks who are, really driven, who get it, and for me, I am so not micromanaging. Mm-hmm. Like I hate being micromanaged and I don't want to micromanage other people. Right. So for me, I need to find folks who can just get things done.
And more on the book. Fill us in. I know that's coming out next year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a testament to being very consistent with your messaging. Mm-hmm. So I never considered myself a writer in that sense. Even though I worked on television and in news and there's writing, it's a different kind of writing than, let's say, like book writing. Mm-hmm. But like I said, once I started doing the one-on-one coaching, mm-hmm. and I think, again, that's a great place to start for any creator and mm-hmm. any entrepreneur who wants to be a thought leader in a particular space. The one-on-one coaching kind of made me realize that a lot of what I wanted to teach kind of started to fit together in this theme. Mm-hmm. And then so for me, I was like, well, the next best thing is to, in addition to all the courses and the teachings that I do, is of course to put it in book form. So when you're just starting out, you're not thinking that you're going to get like the top publishers to publish you. You're just going to be like, okay, I'm just going to put pen to paper and just start writing.
Yeah.
So for me, that's what I did. I just like had an idea, had a concept, and I just started writing. And I actually was going to go the self-publishing route. Basically, mm-hmm. you just do it all yourself. Long story short, you start having conversations with people. People start to kind of like know what you're doing. I sent my manuscript out to a few people and they were like, oh my God, this stuff is so good. So they're like, you got to get an agent. You got to like have them pitch to the top like publishing companies. And long story short, Penguin Random House purchased the book and it's coming out next year. And it was an amazing, amazing deal. And I've been working with their team, the portfolio team specifically, who publishes like the top business books in the field to get it out there. But basically what I'm trying to say is, be consistent with your message, mm-hmm. simultaneously build your audience. And then from there, people will notice. And
you highlighted this at the start, I think, around teaching something that was difficult for you to begin with. And I think this is a theme that we see sometimes of people leaning into something that was a weakness, potential weakness, turned it into a huge strength, and then actually go and share that with others. Partly and even in how it relates to like the psychology of going through this journey and that leaning in bravely to kind of what would have been a challenge for many people, I'm sure.
They always say, stories, right, are the most powerful way to get people to feel like you understand them, to mm-hmm. build connection with people. And I was so self-conscious about my lack of being a good communicator mm-hmm. that it was really hard for me in the beginning, especially you're sitting in these meetings and there's people who are so charismatic, so confident. And I was just kind of like sitting there, you're like the quiet person in the meeting. And I think a lot of us have, there's certain people that we can be like, oh yeah, they're like the quiet person. And that was me. And it was so hard to figure out, like, do I chime in now? Do I raise my hand? Like, it's like those like really quiet, things mm-hmm. that go on in your mind. Mm-hmm. And so it was really difficult for me. And when I first started out, it was hard for me to want to share that part of myself, because you want to come off, especially in the beginning, as like, I am a great communicator. I was born this way,
yeah.
Right? But then you realize quickly that once you actually start sharing that it was terribly hard for you, that it was a struggle, and then you start talking about that a little bit more, many people are like, yeah, I feel that way too. Mm-hmm. And then I think that builds a deeper connection with, you know, your followers, mm-hmm. you know, your audience, that they now trust what you're saying because you understand them and they understand you.
Right. And I think understanding their problem is a lot better than understanding the solution, right? In terms of them being able to trust and resonate and say, like, okay, they get my problem. That means they probably have the solution.
Exactly. And yeah. I think, you know, so we've worked with so many people over these last few years, and I get so many messages of folks who say that they go out and they try to find somebody who can teach them public speaking confidence, mm-hmm. right? But those folks never talk about the more internal, deeper struggle of like, yes, I get body language and tone of voice is important, mm-hmm. but like there's something deeper of like why I cannot actually do that. And right. so for me, I'm highlighting more of that struggle. And I think when I then talk about body language and tone of voice and the words you use, then mm-hmm. it sticks.
I'm curious how you look at success. Like, is there ways that you, how would you measure it or evaluate it in your own business as you're growing it?
I think it's a balance between being very focused on numbers, mm-hmm. right, and metrics, because yes, that's like the business aspect of it. It's like you mm-hmm. got to, at the end of the day, have, you know, X amount coming in and X amount of people who are working and willing to work with you. So that's always there. And mm-hmm. I feel, though, for me, and this is the mm-hmm. reason why I've never really wanted to go that route of getting investors and building into a big mm-hmm. company, because to me, that's a lot of pressure.
Right.
That's a lot of pressure. I have a lot of entrepreneurial friends who are there in that mm-hmm. boat, and I'm like, oh my gosh, to feel like you're constantly having to be very accountable to folks. Like, to me, I felt like I did all that when I was on TV.
Yeah.
You know, having to be accountable to people. So it was a very personal decision to make it very much my own company, run it the way I want, not take outside investments. Mm-hmm. So for me, then the question is, how do I measure success? It's like, do I feel like I'm making an impact? Am I having fun? Mm-hmm. Are we doing good work? To me, that's successful.
Great. That's good. It's a great way to look at it. And it preserves, you're still watching the numbers because they are important in terms of making sure you have the, I don't know, the oxygen in the lungs, the blood in the veins to run the distance, but you're staying true to your kind of mission and vision and values that way, which is great.
Yeah. And I think every entrepreneur has to have that very honest conversation, and whatever it is that they decide, that's kind of like the route you're going to go. And there's good and bad with it, right? Mm-hmm. There's no right or wrong answer. But I think for me, I always knew like lifestyle, for example, was very important to me, mm-hmm. You know, being around and just, yeah. So I made a decision, like, it's not like I'm trying to create this like huge, huge company, but I certainly have a message and I'm trying to just share it as widely as I can.
And it sounds like you're enjoying it too.
Oh my gosh. It's been so fun. And I feel like that's kind of one measure of growth, both personally and professionally. It's feeling that you're still meeting lots of new people, you're learning, there's new avenues, I think to me, yeah. tons of fun.
What do you turn to for learning now? Like as you're growing this quickly, right? I mean, adding people to the team, adding new products, there's a constant learning curve, like probably more so even than in a rising career to an Emmy in media.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of like a mix, to be honest with you. I have found myself diving more into books, maybe just because mm-hmm. I'm now like in the book world, that I'm like, I love talking to different authors and just kind of like, and when you talk to authors, like they're very much subject matter experts in a very specific industry. So whatever book you're reading, like they become experts in that. So you start talking to them to learn a little bit more about this, another person about that. And of course, you're just kind of like consuming content here and there. But to be honest, I try not to, it's a mix. Like you don't want to dive too much into like really learning too much, because then you start emulating it and it starts not being your own, right? So I think for me, it's always like a balance between, okay, learning, consuming, but at the same time, taking a break and then internalizing it and then making it how you, and interpreting it the way you want to interpret it.
And for you, you mentioned even with the team, you're still doing a lot. So I'm curious what a day looks like, or a week, or on average for you, how you spend your time between, say, content, marketing, clients, any coaching still?
My gosh.
Yeah.
It's so different.
It's a big question, I'm sure. And I'm sure it's evolved a lot over time. But where you're at now, what does that day look like for you?
I would say for me, goodness, it's like now to pull out my like Google Calendar and like look at my schedule.
You don't do time audits. It's a great technique. Get in, look at your calendar, see where you spend your time. I know it's hard. I couldn't tell you how my days go.
I know, easily, right? I mean, I will say I just got out of a huge like round of book editing. So like, but of course, that's not my normal.
Right.
But I think for me, I would say, you know, marketing has been a huge part. I never realized how, as a, when you're also an entrepreneur, very much the marketing is, and also because like I've made myself also the face of the message. So it's like, oh gosh. Like, so for better or worse, it's like, then you really have to be the one out there talking about it, right? But I would say like a huge chunk of our time is just figuring out like marketing and how do we create the content, right? That will resonate, playing around with that. A huge chunk of time is also just meetings with like potential clients, potential companies to just share how we can work with them. So it's that. And then another part of it is then creating the content, whether it's for the corporate companies or for like the courses we want. Right. So I guess it's like kind of three buckets. Like it's the marketing, it's the meetings, and then it's the actual work of creating and then delivering it.
And the meetings is because you have a lot of these larger corporate clients.
Yes. The meetings with are with the corporate clients who are reaching out and be like, hey, we heard about your work. We'd love to work with you. Let's set up a meeting. Let's talk about how this would look like.
And then sometimes you do, is it bespoke or white label or somewhat custom for them?
Yes. So there are certain companies who are saying, hey, we love kind of the way you deliver the communications work that you're doing. And with the courses that we currently have, they're very just like standard. But they're like saying, hey, can you create one specifically for, our engineering team, our sales team. So we'll take content that we've already created and essentially kind of like white label it, or we may create it from scratch depending on what they're looking for. So that's more of like a huge like program that we're doing with them.
And then can you share, or how do you see that like your division of opportunity, product revenue lines within your business between say the more consumer, big corporate where you have to take a meeting versus like broad reach online? Where's your primary focus or biggest opportunities that you see?
So I will say, you know, with the courses, what's great about those is like once you create it, it's there. And for you, all you have to figure out is then the marketing now. It's like, how do I push this course out? I would say though, for me personally, I have really much, so I enjoyed that because you kind of create it and you leave it and then you just think marketing.
Yeah.
But what I've really liked is I love going into these corporate companies and I love being there with them. So, you know, if you ask me today, like, what am I particularly enjoying? I am particularly enjoying the more corporate side of things because you get to go in, you get to like work with the folks and really kind of tailor a program to them.
Yep.
So yeah, it really just kind of depends on the season too, to be honest with you.
And on the marketing side, you said the other category, big category of marketing, is that still primarily LinkedIn audience building for you, or is there extension beyond that now?
So LinkedIn has always been our number one. We've always doubled down on LinkedIn. But through time, you start realizing, okay, you kind of have to be a little bit of everywhere as well. So I've definitely, and I'm not good at it, but I'm really trying to do Instagram a little bit more. And then the good thing, though, with content is you can always repurpose it, right? So you just take the LinkedIn stuff, kind of make it more Instagram friendly and then TikTok friendly and then Facebook friendly. I think for us, we've always found that when we talk to folks on LinkedIn, they're in that mentality of wanting to learn or grow already versus sometimes I feel with Instagram, you're there too. It's more entertainment as well as with TikTok. It's more entertainment,
Enough. One, you're reclining on the couch. The other, you're likely upright at your desk. One, you're in work mode. The other, you're like decompressed mode often. I mean, not to overgeneralize, but it does feel like different, even the same audience can be in a very different mindset on a different platform. So I love that you really were thoughtful of LinkedIn. This is where they're going, or coincidentally, but this is the audience. So this is how I'm going to speak to them. And this is because this is what I'm selling. And so this is a perfect fit to think platform through to product.
Exactly. And you said it exactly right. It could be the same person, but their mentality in that moment of scrolling, whether it's scrolling on LinkedIn or Instagram, it's a little bit different. I feel like when you want to open up your LinkedIn, you're probably thinking about something career related already, right?
Yeah.
Versus why else would you be on LinkedIn? So yes, for us, we want to try to capture those folks who are already in that headspace.
All right. A little bit of a 180 question, but I'm curious how you think about AI and or if you use it or looking at it or thinking about it.
We have. Yeah. And the reason why is because of that question of, so because this company is very much surrounded based on my content, what I'm teaching, there's only me, right? Mm. And some folks don't necessarily want, let's say, the courses as a way to mm-hmm. learn. They want to have access to you. So we have been like looking at different companies because we're not like an AI company in any mm-hmm. way. We don't have the technology to do that. But we have been thinking about like, what are the technologies out there that could help scale my message where people can feel like they're still interacting with me, even though it's not necessarily me, but they're still getting my specific advice. So there are different like, you know, technologies that we're looking at that do support that, whether it's kind of getting that instantaneous Q&A, whether it's like mm-hmm. a chat function. We've been using AI also in a lot of our coaching. So if we have folks who want one-on-one communications coaching, we partner with a company who we use their AI platform. And once you kind of like implement or integrate kind of like, let's say we're doing a one-on-one coaching call, it'll feed out the advice, the tips on how you can get better with like filler words or pacing that a human coach can't necessarily
measure.
Back
to the coach. So it's giving feedback to the coach after the recording of a call saying, here's how you can be a better coach?
No, or how you can be a better speaker. So
speaker back to the individual.
Yes.
So they're getting your coaching, but also AI generated. Interesting.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. That's very cool. What's the tool that you're using there?
So a huge shout out to, the company's called Udely.
Yeah.
And they really doubled down on this AI for communications. And we use it a lot because we think it enhances one-on-one communications coaching that a human coach cannot. So anytime
that's great.
Our coaches work with folks, we tell our coach, you have to implement this into your coaching too.
Udely. Okay. A few times come up around how you're still sort of the core of the business. I'm thinking, do you think about not extracting yourself? Because I can see you love it. You enjoy doing it. This is like your passion in doing this. But are you thinking how you, as you continue to scale the team, is there a way that you scale it beyond requiring you, your brand, even from a brand perspective? Like there's a work perspective. There's also a brand perspective, right?
Yes. So I mentioned that we have our one-on-one coaches, but recently I've been thinking more about, so I have a lot of frameworks, like very specific frameworks that I've created that I've worked well for the audience that I'm targeting, mm-hmm. that ultimately it's just kind of coaching the coaches on basically sharing our philosophy and our frameworks of teaching. So then from there, they can be the ones to go out and teach this. A lot of folks in the thought leadership space who have very specific frameworks, they do this already. So yes, that is kind of like our next step. We're getting there and I'm like trying to figure out, okay, yeah, I mean, it's maybe coaching the coach, right? Yeah. And then that's kind of how you spread and continue to impact, even though it's not necessarily me doing it.
Right. And that gives you more free time to be creative, think about the future.
Exactly.
Yeah. So last question, just curious how you see the future for you. Where are you going with, I mean, you've got the book launch coming, but if you fast forward a while, what's that look like for you? Or what are you most excited about?
My whole brain recently has truly been on this book just because it's what I've been working on. And so I'm very curious and very excited to see once this book comes out next summer 2024.
Yeah.
What that'll mean. And I think for me, it will be probably more speaking engagements, which for me, I love. I love doing that already. So just kind of taking that, how that'll impact, you know, the courses, the workshops, we'll see. But I think it's really then taking what I'm talking about in this book and then trying to just make it bigger. So that's kind of what
it's good to have a focus. And what's the book title, or do you have one yet?
I do. It's called Smart, Not Loud, How to Get Noticed at Work for All the Right Reasons.
Smart, Not Loud, How to Get Noticed at Work for All the Right Reasons. Great. Love it. Okay, we'll look for it.